Saturnalia, everyone. You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. And we are still listening to The Cabaret of Monsters, which is a prequel novella to the Creature Court trilogy, which was strongly based on ancient Roman festival traditions and their calendar. Given that Cabaret of Monsters is a Saturnalia book, I am giving you some lovely bits of historical tidbit about how the real Saturnalia worked. So the poet Catullus, who's one of my favourites because he's very snarky and a lot of his poetry is just insults for people, and the rest of it is just him like trying to pick up girls. Or boys. He was equal opportunity with both insults and with who he wanted to pick up. But anyway, so the poet Catullus called Saturnalia the best of days. There's one famous example that he wrote a poem about where he received, I told you before about the gag gifts that Romans like to give each other. He received a collection of bad poetry as a gift from a friend, and he threatened to write some even worse poetry in return to get his revenge. We know this because he wrote a poem about it, which I'm going to read to you because it is Saturnalia and it is a time for poetry. So, Catullus. This is translated by Josephine Balmer, and I have heartlessly stolen it from the internet. By all means, run out and find her translations of other poems. Catullus is great. Which is to say, Catullus is terrible. I continue. So, Catullus's Saturnalia gift. If I didn't love you, sweet teasing Calvus, far more than my own eyes, then for today's gift I'd hate you with the hate of Vatinius. For what have I said or done to deserve it, that you're killing me now with all these poets? May the gods frown down on whichever client settled accounts with this role of miscreants. Unless, as I suspect, it's that schoolmaster Sulla, writing off debts by setting these texts. Then I bear no hate, have no complaint to make. At least your hard work receives due recompense. God, here's as cursed a verse as one might expect. A book, I know, you sent to your Catullus to finish him off, to floor and to bore us on Saturnalia, our day for pleasure. No, not so fast. You can't escape, my false friend. For if this long night of torment ever ends, I'm off to the bookshops to buy Cesius, Aquinas, and Sophenus, all poison pens, to pay you back in full for your own torture. Until then, goodbye, farewell, it's time to quit. Let those bad feet limp away, lines and couplets, disease of the age, unreadable poets. And now enjoy the next chapter of Cabaret of Monsters. Chapter 7. 2 days before the Ides of Saturnalis, the early hours. You know, said Christoph fervently, this explains so much. He was the only one in the boarding house with wound stitching skills, thanks to his odd jobs as bartender and Dottore's assistant. Christoph used bright, peacock-coloured thread to close Lavilla's angry wound. Sunshine and Evie stood back near the doorway of Evie's room, both of them trying not to peer too closely at the visceral details. Every so often, Lavilla gasped and flailed and turned into either one large or two smaller wolves, also wounded. Christoph insisted on sewing them up as well, though he asked Evie and Sunshine to help with that part, bracing themselves with towels and blankets to hold the wolves down. They used gin to clean the wounds and made Lavilla drink some when she was in human shape to numb the pain. Ruby Red, climbing out of her bed long after the others had run to answer Evie's cries for help, took one look at the messy scene and stormed out of the house, claiming she was going to locate himself if she had to scour every bar in the city. What I'm hearing is she thinks we might run out of gin, Sunshine said dryly. The fear is real, Evie drawled back. She wanted to scream and laugh again, She'd faced dangers before, all kinds of strange sights. In the work, she never discussed with anyone but paying clients. Still, she'd never seen this before. It was new and exhilarating and terrifying. How many of them are there in this city? Sunshine took her hand, and Evie let them. If ever there was time for a bit of comforting hand-holding, it was this. Finally, there was a mended, blood-stained Dem lying asleep on Evie's bed. Christoph, Evie and Sunshine sat around with the last of the gin, trying to make sense of recent events. I thought it was crime, Christoph admitted, his head lolling against Sunshine's shoulder. You know, he has to get his money from somewhere. He was a bag of rags with nothing when he ran away as a lamb, and he came back years later as Lord Muck in a top hat, ready to save our souls with his deep pockets. It had to be a rich lover, gambling, gangsters, or all three. And there were times... He looks hollow some days, Sunshine added. Scraped raw, like he's seen devils and angels, looked them right in the eye. Half the padding in his suit is secrets. Do you think, said Evie, and took another drink. Do you think he turns into wolves? The others considered this question in silence. She couldn't let them know how important the answer was to her. Someone at the Vittorina Royale, someone who had been there longer than Lavilla, was a thread connecting the fairy tale creatures of the city, the people who turned into wolves. It had to be himself, didn't it? There was a flurry at the window and a bang. All three of them jumped and yelped with a varying degree of shrillness. That took fucking years off my life, said Christoph with a hand to his chest. Don't open the window, Sunshine said urgently. Evie stood on shaky feet and stepped closer. Shadows fluttered at the glass, pitch black outside their circle of lantern light. I think it's a bird, she said, and took another step nearer the glass. Slam! Ravens threw themselves at the glass, three or four of them more. Evie saw a whole crowd of them. A murder, that was the collective noun. A murder of ravens. They swirled and swooped outside her window, crashing into it head first as if desperate to come inside. What the fuck was in that gin? Christoph asked wildly. Lavilla gasped and sat up. The thin blanket fell aside, baring her blood-stained breasts to the room. Her cosmetic was smeared, her hair was a mess. "Let him in," she said. "Open the window." "No," Evie snapped. "I'm not doing that." Lavilla's eyes blazed, a piercing blue all of a sudden, then bright golden yellow. She curled her lip up into a snarl. "Open the frigging window." "How about you explain?" Christoph started. Lavilla screamed. She threw back her head and screamed in a sound so sharp and desperate that it made the house shake. The door burst open, and himself stood there, the stage master. A narrow, gangling young man with spectacles, messy hair, and a suit far too tailored and expensive to make any sense. He has to get his money from somewhere, Christoph said. Half the padding in his suit is secrets, Sunshine said. Evie was pretty sure she knew one of those secrets. Calm down, dearling, said himself, as if finding a screaming, blood-stained, naked Lavilla in another dam's bed was an ordinary market nine for him. I've got your boys. He opened the door wider with an actor's flourish. A horde of slithering, furry creatures tumbled over his feet, across the floor and up into Lavilla's lap. Weasels. What was the collective noun for weasels? If ravens were a murder, then weasels were a scamper? A trick? An infestation? Evie didn't realise she'd spoken those words out loud until himself answered, a confusion of weasels, or a good old-fashioned pack. But you're right about ravens. They're a murder. Before Evie, before anyone could stop him, himself, marched across the room and threw open the window. Ravens flocked into the small space, flapping and cawing. Kristoff yelled and battered at them. Sunshine sat down on the floor in a hurry, eyes wide and startled. The ravens were here for Lavilla. They blanketed her and the confusion of weasels, with black feathers and angry eyes. "Nope, I'm out," said Kristoff, and staggered out the door on wobbly legs. Sunshine made a small, moaning sound. "Give us the room," said himself, with an imperious gesture. Evie narrowed her eyes. She wasn't one of his cabaret kickers, and it was past time he remembered that. "I don't take orders from..." "Nope," said Sunshine, bolting to their feet and slinging an arm around Evie's waist. "Come on, you can bunk with me." Evie sputtered, but allowed Sunshine to drag her out of the room, slamming the door on the chaos of animals and blood and secrets. "What the fuck are you doing?" himself screamed on the other side of the door. "This is our life, poet. What do you want from me?" Lavilla screamed back at him. "Basic survival instincts at a bare minimum. You are sloppy in the sky and you know it. I haven't seen you fight that badly since you were 14. Are you trying to end up dead?" Evie wanted to keep listening, to learn as much as she could about what was going on here. Poet. She knew that name. She'd been listening out for that name since she first arrived in the city. But the screaming devolved into muffled talking and what might have been sobbing. She startled as she felt Sunshine's hand on her arm. "That offer was genuine," said the theatrical. "Come to bed with me." Evie kept staring at the closed door. Sleep. She did need sleep. Also, she needed to wash spatters of Lavilla's blood off her skin. "I don't want to put you out," she said absently. "I can crash in the upstairs parlour." Sunshine sighed. "Let's blame the gin for how slow you are," they said. "No worries if you're not interested, but are you absolutely sure you heard the invitation?" "Oh, not bed, but bed." Evie heard a muffled thump from within her room. More talking, but no more screams. She was exhausted and wrung out from the adrenaline, the shocks, the gin. She had a story to dig for, but it didn't have to be right this second. "That's tempting," she said, turning to look directly at Sunshine, whose eyes were dark in the barely lit hallway. They hadn't brought the lantern with them, though Evie was certain that whatever himself and Lavilla and their animal friends were, they could all see in the dark. Sunshine pressed into her, soft lips brushing Evie's mouth like a promise. "Be tempted. Untangle the nonsense in the daylight." "That's the most sensible thing I've heard all knocks." Evie kissed Sunshine more thoroughly, embracing this welcome distraction from whatever was going on in her room. "Who says I care enough to untangle the nonsense in the daylight?" she added. Sunshine rolled their eyes. "Please, I've slept with writers before. I know you're kind." Hours later, Evie startled awake from a sleep deeper than she'd expected. Sunshine was a warm shape of limbs and hair beside her. Why had Evie woken up? What kind of creature was invading the boarding house now? She peered across the attic. Daylight sparkled through cracks in the shutters that Sunshine and Ruby Red kept closed because they slept till nearly noon. Ruby Red was asleep in the narrow bed on the far side of the attic, along with another shape buried under quilts. Evie could only hope that it was not Zephyr, as there was enough drama around here already. A knocking from below resounded up through the thin walls. A visitor on the doorstep. That must be what woke her up. Evie borrowed an oversized silk coat from a heap of garments that almost certainly belonged to Ruby Red and not Sunshine, who kept better care of their things, and made her way downstairs, tying the sash securely around her waist. No one else stirred as she made her way down. Kristoff's door and Evie's were securely latched shut. Must she break down her own door to reclaim residence from Livilla and himself? First things first. Evie opened the door to find herself faced with, well, he had to be what Christoph always referred to as a theatrical. A beautiful man, all blazing red hair and pale skin. He had a swagger to him, and a coat that might have been fine and fashionable years ago, but was worn and ragged at the seams. Livilla, the stranger said in a rough voice. Where is she? Evie stood her ground. She'd lived in enough boarding houses over the years to know when you didn't let a Dems fancy man through the door, not with a set to his shoulders that told you he knew how to throw a punch. Never heard of her. Evangeline, said a soft voice at the top of the stairs. Himself stood there in shirt and braces, still bloodstained from the knocks before. Let him in. He's one of us. He's safe? She asked without thinking. The visitor raised his eyebrows at that. Himself gave a hollow laugh. Not especially, he said, but Livilla will want him all the same. The dangerous man slid up the stairs, like he was the stage master, and himself was the servant who polished his boots. They stood together for a moment, murmuring, and then himself took the man's hand and led him into the room with Livilla. As the door closed, Evie breathed out all at once. She felt like she'd been punched, like she'd been trapped in a room with a wild animal and only just escaped by the skin of her teeth. She would like to say she had no idea why her body was alert with fight or flight, but the truth was, she had a very good idea who it was she'd let into the house. Evie hurried up the stairs, quickening her step as she passed her own landing, and kept going all in a rush until she was back in Sunshine's bed, burrowing under the quilts.
What's the bother?
Sunshine muttered sleepily. Nothing, said Evie. Shut up and kiss me. Sunshine smiled in the shuttered light and wound soft arms around Evie's neck. That I can do. Later that day, the Mermaid Review of the Vittorina Royale presented its final dress rehearsal of their Saturnalia show. They went through the afternoon and into the evening, every act performed twice. Evie took absent-minded notes for her newspaper story as Christoph and Ruby Red blazed up the stage in the harlequinade, bouncing off each other with superb comic timing in a sea of trilling dancers. Christoph was the sad clown who loved the first Columbine, a princessa in sugar-pink layers of petticoat. Ruby Red played the wicked fairy who kept the lovers apart by repeatedly enchanting them to fall in love with all manner of strange creatures, played by tumblers in garish masks. The love dance of Harlequino and the donkey was something to be seen. Evie had watched it before, but never with the comedy mask in place. It made her laugh out loud. She couldn't quell the thought that she'd done something wrong that morning. She should not have let that strange man into the house where Livilla was so vulnerable. Would Livilla even make it to the rehearsal? Her performance was up next. Surely she wouldn't be up to climbing out of bed with her belly so recently stitched. We're almost there, said a low voice at Evie's ear. She did not have to turn to know himself sat behind her, observing the rehearsal with a very different eye to hers. It's brilliant, she said honestly. He didn't sound impressed. Tell me what we're missing. Evie's fountain pen tapped against her notebook. Well, there's the rather obvious absence. She did turn this time, giving him an arch look. You have friends who can turn into animals. Why isn't that in your show? Tumblers spun and rolled across the stage, wearing masks of cats and hounds, ferrets and lions. Not a cabaret of monsters in the traditional sense, because they weren't played by children. But it made a spectacular segue to the Saints and Angel play. What makes you think it's not? Asked himself. The stage cleared and Livilla stepped out in the gown of an angel, trailing white feathers and strands of star beads across the stage. Evie stared. How was she even upright? It was a beautiful song. The angelic interlude was a classic piece of stagecraft. Behind her, the saints and other masks fell into place, tugging props and set pieces as they went, preparing for the final act. Sunshine, who had already performed two solo skits with great humour and grace throughout the show, was on stage now in a silver mask. They played the wicked, charming saint to LaVilla's exquisite angel. The two of them flirted archly from stage left to stage right and back again, making the play far more sensuously charged than an audience might expect. In the traditional story, saints were tempted by the angel, who literally seduced them into treading the path of virtue, only to draw swords in the final scene and send them off to war in the name of goodness and sacred duty. Here, it seemed that the opposite was happening. Sunshine the saint, with their army of sidekicks and cat-faced tumblers, was always one line of song away from corrupting LaVilla's angel quite completely, while LaVilla, eyelashes fluttering, seemed utterly delighted to be corrupted. "What would you change?" himself pressed. "About the saints and angel." "It's a little late for notes," said Evie. "The show opens to the public in 2 days." "It's never too late," said the stage master. "He must have been quite a detore," Evie said under her breath, as LaVilla swept gracefully into stage left, her head held high. "The cove you brought to her room this morning. You'd never know she was wounded at all." "Oh," said himself, mouth going thin. "He wasn't a detore, rather the opposite." The dress rehearsal was enough of a triumph that the cast and crew demanded a celebratory breakfast, despite it being well into the evening. LaVilla was invited along and almost looked like she was going to join them, but the gentleman in the ragged coat and dangerous eyes turned up again, with a bouquet of flowers that himself looked at furiously, as if he wanted to stomp them to the ground. "Garnet," laughed LaVilla, clasping the flowers to her bosom. "You shouldn't have." "Garnet, of course." Evie watched him from where she stood, surrounded by theatricals. She had guessed it was him, but knowing it for certain, that was something else. He didn't look much like a murderer, but Evie knew better than most that you could never tell that from a person's outside appearance. He was pissed off and demanding all the same. "Poet, are you coming with us?" Clearly he addressed himself, from the colour that rose in their stage master's cheeks. "Poet," said Christoph beneath his breath, more unfriendly than teasing. "Is that a pet name, lovey?" They looked like a trio. LaVilla in a fur coat that cost far more than any mask or columbine could afford, her dangerous bow, flicking a fancy fob watch open and closed, like he couldn't be bothered to wait even a minute more than he had to. Himself, poet, impeccably attired in his suit and top hat, leaning towards the two as if pulled into orbit around them, like the moon around the world. He looked at Garnet like he wanted to stab him or kiss him. If he chose these friends over the theatricals, Evie had no doubt that someone would get stabbed, and her bet was on Ruby Red or Christoph to wield the weapon. "I have my company," himself said finally. "Things to do. Stay brilliant." It was a choice and a dismissal. Garnet's face looked perfectly blank, as if no one had ever said no to him before. LaVilla blew kisses before she left on Garnet's arm, and Ruby Red blew more back, as if they were the best of friends. "She could do better," Ruby Red said in a mutter, as the company surged away along the street, in search of a Knox bar willing to serve cocktails and oysters to this many people at once. "Did you see his sleeves? Disgraceful." "I liked his shoes," said Christoph. "And his shoulders," he added, with a half-hearted leer. "You're a pack of gossipy old cats," said himself, but he was smiling. First round's on me. The company cheered. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.